And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, hello there. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. Weekend looming ahead. It's the second weekend in February already. I was looking at the calendar this morning, and it's a very rare February. There are five Saturdays in February this year, and that almost never happens. For one thing, February usually only has 28 days, so it would be pretty impossible to get five Saturdays. And the only way you can get five Saturdays is, number one, if it's a leap year, which it is, and number two, if the first day of February is a Saturday. And that's what it was this year. Last Saturday was February 1st. So, at any rate, the weather could be a heck of a lot worse this time of year. I was talking with my morning colleague, Kate, earlier today. She was talking about how murky and foggy and soggy it is out there today. I said, hey, can you imagine what it ordinarily is this time of year, wrapping up the first week of February? Frigid. Sometimes you go 10, 15 days without ever getting above freezing. You got snow on the ground. You got ice in the rivers. None of that this year. Well, it's one of our more popular features on the It's Your Turn program today. Ask the Lawyer, and we do this periodically throughout the year in cooperation with the Butler County Bar Association and Janice Hackett, the director of the Bar Association. We welcome local attorney Sean Gallagher with us here in the studio today. Sean, it's good to see you again.
Dave, it's always a pleasure being here. Thank you for having us on.
You practice with your father at the Butler firm of Murren, Taylor, and Gallagher, right?
That's correct. Dad has been practicing law for 30 years now, and I'm coming up on year six.
Where are your offices located?
We're at 110 East Diamond Street, directly across from the courthouse, the new Next Year building, which they've done a beautiful job renovating over there. We're directly across Diamond Park from them.
Mm-hmm. Right on the Diamond downtown. Before we start talking about law and legal issues, remind people if you want to join our conversation at any time today. I've got lots of questions for Sean, but if you have questions about the law or legal issues, you can feel free to join us at 283-2525, 283-2525. Is there any particular focus on what type of law your firm practices?
Our primary practice area is municipal law. We represent about 20 different local governments here within Butler and Allegheny counties. Besides that, we do wills and estates. That's probably our second largest practice area. We mm-hmm. do real estate law, both between property disputes and closings. We do limited family law, mostly limited to grandparent custody, which is a growing area within the state of Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And then pretty much other civil work that works its way through the doors. Our general rule is no criminal.
No criminal law. Mm-hmm. So it's all civil law. When you're representing municipalities, so you would be what's referred to as the solicitor for such and such a borough or such and such a township or authority or whatever?
That's absolutely correct. We serve at the pleasure of the Board of Supervisors or the council of whatever borough, township, authority it may be. Our job is to provide guidance on the law to the people who are making the decisions. And one of the unique parts about being a solicitor for any kind of a local government is that you're expected to do lots of things, because local government does lots of things, from employee relations to real estate to condemnation actions to dealing with the state government and grants and DEP, working with them on consent orders. So you do a lot of things as a municipal lawyer throughout the course of municipal law. But not only are we expected to do that, but we're expected to be able to relay back to the people who are making the decisions, the supervisors, the council members, the managers, whatever it may be, in terms that they can understand. The law is confusing. If I was responsible for drafting it, I would draft it often different ways. But it's written the way it's written because it's been written that way for many years. There's lots of terms of art that are often included, and it's our job to make sure that the supervisors know what exactly they're looking at so that they can make informed decisions and so that we and they can inform the public. The other part of our duty is to make sure that the public understands what's going on. So we do a lot of that through our work as solicitor.
Once again, our phone number is 283-2525. If you have questions about the law or legal issues, we'll do our best to at least give you some guidance. We will point out, as we always do, that any advice that might be discussed on this program should not be relied upon as the final word. Views expressed are based on limited information that we may get in a call, and any specific problems should be referred to an attorney that you can deal with in private. And any views expressed are not necessarily those of the Butler County Bar Association either. So, with that said, phone number is 283-2525 if you've got questions about the law. Do you have to attend the regular meetings of the municipalities that you represent all the time, or if there's a question, do they call you, you know, later?
Both. It really depends on the size of the municipality and the needs of the municipality. A lot of the larger ones that we represent, we go to all of their meetings, and we're present whenever they need us there, and they have the ability to call us or to email us to look for information in between those times when the meetings aren't happening. For some of the smaller municipalities who don't have to deal with a lot of the questions that the larger ones deal with, we go on a case-by-case basis. Some of the smaller boroughs, for example, we'll see once or twice a year whenever they have questions, and we're happy to go up and attend, but they don't need us there at every meeting because they don't have the larger questions that often appear with the larger municipalities.
Talk a little bit about wills and estates. I know that's another area of some focus for you and your firm. It's just impossible to overemphasize the need for everyone to have a will. A lot of people think, well, you know, I'm not a Hollywood actress or a big league pitcher or something like that. I don't have a whole lot of money. I don't really have an estate. I don't need a will. Sean, everybody has an estate of some size or another, right?
It's true. And one of the biggest things that I always say to my clients when they come into my office is, if I had a crystal ball and could predict the future, I would be in a very different line of work making much more money. But I'm not. I'm here to serve whatever our clients need. And so as a part of that, we always recommend that you're looking to the future to protect yourself from the worst case scenario. A lot of times, folks who are of retirement age and older, they have the idea, the reason why they're looking to set up a will is to determine how their estate is going to be handled, who's getting what, how they plan on distributing to kids, grandkids, college funds, et cetera, et cetera. And there's lots of ways to go about doing that. But one of the things that, as a younger lawyer, that I try and emphasize to folks who are newlyweds or who are going into their first relationships is, it's important to understand that your will not only determines your physical goods, but also any children that you may have. If you're looking to get a guardian or someone to take care of your children because, God forbid, something happens to you and your partner, it's much easier to do it through a will than to have the state step in. And so one of the things that we always emphasize is if you've just gotten married, come on in and talk with us. And we can set that up so that if your children are protected and you know that they're going to be in a safe situation, a safe, good situation that you planned and not the state or someone else planned. The same thing with getting a power of attorney done. God forbid you're ever in an accident and unable to communicate your wishes. That's why we get a power of attorney in place, so that you know that you have someone that you can trust to handle those decisions for you. Same thing with a living will or an advanced health care directive. God forbid you're in an end-of-life situation where you're unable to make those decisions for yourself. You can explain to your doctors and your physicians and your caregivers that these are the things that I want to happen should I be in a situation where I'm going to be incapacitated for an extended or possibly permanent duration. And that way you can take care of all of that while you have the ability to do so. I am happy to go out to nursing care facilities. We do it all the time, but it's much easier to do it when that accident hasn't already happened.
Yeah. You shouldn't wait until you're middle-aged or older to make out a will, right?
That's correct.
It's hard to... When you're 21 years old, it's hard to think about making out a will, but you should, really.
That's correct, and I always joke with friends who are getting married that I'm going to give them a gift certificate for to come and do a will at my office, and they always say, well, can we just have the cash instead? But it's important to think about that kind of thing because these are decisions that if they didn't need to be made, then it's not going to have any impact on you whatsoever. But you're always looking to deal with that worst-case scenario. God forbid you're in a car accident. God forbid you're in a plane crash. God forbid you're just walking down the street and you have a heart attack. I mean, we see instances of that in the news all the time where you don't know that you're going to be in trouble until it actually happens.
Look at the fatal helicopter crash in California a little over a week ago. There was a traffic accident earlier, well, it was back in January now, I was going to say this month, here in Butler County, where two people were hurt when another driver fell asleep at the wheel. You know, some people say, well, I don't have to worry about that. I'm a great driver. I've never had an accident. Somebody falls asleep at the wheel and veers into your lane, and there you are. You just never know.
Yeah. When I was a young boy, the Boy Scout motto was always be prepared.
Yeah.
And you can be in control of as much of your life as you want to, but you have no control over the external factors that may come and affect you later on. So it's always easier to get it done now as opposed to doing it later. Is it a hard conversation to have? Absolutely. No one likes to think about their own mortality. No one likes to think about themselves in an incapacitated state. But I promise you, it is easier to do it now than laying in a hospital bed.
I want to talk a little bit about an area of family law that I understand is growing quite a bit. And you mentioned this earlier, grandparent custody cases. We're seeing more and more of this. You're probably seeing more and more of it in your practice, I guess, huh?
I say unfortunately, but I want to put a caveat with that. I'm happy to see that grandparents are taking such an interest in their grandchildren's lives. But the reason why I say unfortunately is that many parents are falling victims to the evils of today. Drugs, alcohol, mental health issues. There are all sorts of things that, for whatever reason, parents are just unable to take care of their children. And it's not a judgment on the parents whatsoever. They have their own issues to deal with, and we understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But our objective in any grandparent custody action, and what the law clearly states, is that we're to act in the best interest of the child. And in a growing number of cases, the grandparents are the most stable situation for that child. They have the ability to provide a stable foundation. They know where they're going to be sleeping every night. They know that the child is going to get to school on time and get picked up from school on time. And we're, in most cases, not trying to eliminate the parent from seeing the child. The Commonwealth has recognized that parents have a right to parent their children. But we're just trying to make sure that the child has a safe and stable situation so that they can regrow that relationship with their parents. And hopefully their parents get back on track. That's always the objective. We don't want to see anybody fail. But in the case, we want to make sure that that child doesn't fail because of the situation that the parent's in.
Mm-hmm. Folks, if you have any questions along these lines, you're always welcome to join our conversation. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. So there is law in Pennsylvania now that, depending on circumstances, would allow grandparents to get official custody of their grandkids?
That's correct. There's a very limited set of circumstances where grandparents are able to get custody of the grandchildren. And the first step is whether or not the parents are separated. In the case where the parents are together, then the grandparents have no ability to interfere with the parental raising of the child.
Even if there was, let's say, for hypothetically, an opioid problem with the parents?
The only time that the grandparents would be able to intervene in that case is if Child Protective Services was involved and mandated a placement elsewhere.
Okay.
But in terms of a general custody action through the family court, the grandparents don't have standing to intervene in that case. But when the parents are separated or divorced, the door has been opened by the legislature slightly. The law has actually been in flux for the past 10 years, really. It was most recently rewritten approximately 3 years ago. And initially, the door had been widened for grandparents, and then the courts, for various reasons, narrowed that door, and the legislature has responded in kind to narrow that door,
mm-hmm.
recognizing
mm-hmm.
that the parents have the right to parent their child, however. But in the circumstance where the grandparents do have standing because there is separation and there is disagreement among the parents, then the grandparents have the right to enter in and ask the court for either visitation or full custody, depending on the situation.
I'm guessing, and I don't know anything about this particular area, but I'm guessing that you have to get involved and go to the courts whenever it's contested by the parent. Let's take that hypothetical situation where the parents are separated, mm-hmm. and let's say the mother has custody of the child, and grandparents are concerned about the health and welfare. They don't think that the kid's being properly cared for, whatever. If the biological mother says, okay, you can go live with grandma and grandpa, that would be one thing. But if the mother opposes it, if the mother fights it, then that's where legal help is has to come in?
Correct. And I would actually recommend that you, if you're in a situation like that you get legal help a little bit earlier. If mom or dad does say that, yes, the child can go live with the grandparents,
mm-hmm.
it's in the best interest of the grandparents to get that agreement reduced to writing so that in case something does change, you have something that you can refer back to that you can say, this is the agreement that was entered into between the parties, and this is what we want to go to. So it could be something as simple as grandma and grandpa have the kids Monday through Friday, and the parents can see the children every other weekend or something along those lines. But if you can get it by agreement of the parties, it's much easier than going through the court process. The court process in Butler involves a mediation or conciliation first, where you meet with a neutral third party appointed by the county,
mm-hmm.
to see if an agreement can be reached. And if no agreement can be reached, the conciliator will make a recommendation. And then if you disagree with that recommendation, you have the right to a hearing before a judge. In that process, I won't lie, can be an expensive process. Especially if you're dealing with full custody situations, which often require a psychological evaluation of both the child and the parents and the grandparents, depending on the situation. But if you're looking to make sure that the child has a safe place, you have to weigh your ability to provide for the child against the cost of the litigation.
What if the separated parent does not agree?
Well, that's...
Now that, like, let's say the mother has custody in the situation we were discussing earlier, and then the separated father hears about this, and he disagrees.
He has the right to intervene in that case, just as mom would have a right to intervene in that case, or dad would have an intervene. The other parent always has the right to enter their objection into that case. And if that happens, you go through the same process, a conciliation, a recommendation, and then if you disagree with the recommendation, the ability to go before a judge.
This is delicate territory, though, isn't it?
It is, especially whenever you're talking about the well-being of children. You don't want to see parents lose their relationship with their children. That's a very important bond for a child, and we see the detrimental effects of the loss of a parent or the loss of a relationship with a parent throughout a child's lifetime. Therapy works, but it takes years to work through that. And again, I'm generalizing here.
Of course, yeah.
But the ability to give a child a safe and stable situation is always first and foremost what I look at as an attorney. Where is the place that this child is going to have the best chance to succeed in life? Because the child doesn't really have the ability to fend for themselves. They are the vulnerable one. Catholic social teaching tells us that we are to look out for the vulnerable populations in our society, the widow, the orphan, the resident alien. It's always important to make sure that those who have no voice are given a voice in some form or another. And that's what we try and do through grandparent custody, is provide a safe, stable space for the child.
Could the biological parents, if grandparents were awarded custody of the kids, could the biological parents at some later point, say several years later, challenge that again?
Yes. That is open to them the whole way through unless the grandparents adopt the child and the parental rights are terminated, which is another long-involved court process. Courts are reticent to terminate the rights of parents unless there is shown neglect, shown disregard, no interest in the child's life whatsoever. You'll see it in the cases where folks are abandoned and mom or dad just disappears. And in that case, the court wants to make sure that this child has a good, safe family situation. But again, Pennsylvania law has recognized the right of parents to maintain their relationship with their child. So it's always a constant, I don't want to say battle, but it's always a constant awareness of what are the parents able to do and what are the grandparents able to do, and trying to strike a balance between the two.
How did we deal with this generations ago before Pennsylvania law was adjusted? Was this just done informally among families where, because I'm assuming that occasionally this would happen, you know, back in the 1940s and 1950s, whatever?
Well, anecdotally, my grandpa was the youngest of 15 children. And whenever he was growing up, mom was still doing a lot of the primary caregiving. His mother was still doing a lot of the primary caregiving. But a lot of times the older children would become responsible for the younger children. And so you saw a lot of that in combination with, and again, anecdotally, they'd say, you're going to go with your uncle for a summer. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to go with your aunt in Maine for a couple of years to get some schooling or whatever it may be. I don't want to say it's a situation where family lineage meant a lot more, but it was a situation where people didn't think to use the courts in that situation.
Let's take a call. Our phone number is 283-2525. If you have questions for Attorney Sean Gallagher, he's here in the studio with us. Caller, go right ahead. It's your turn with Attorney Sean Gallagher.
Hi, Sean. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Mike, I have a couple of questions, and I'd just like to know if you could give me the answers. Children and youth, if they check a house and the house is filthy, and there's cockroaches or something in the house that's not taken care of, will they still let the parent the children go into that house from the mother to visit the father?
John?
That's one question. I have another one, too.
Sure.
To answer that question, Child Protective Services generally has two things they're looking at. First is for specific reports of abuse. They have a system in place where they will go and investigate whether or not an abuse actually occurred. The second is General Protective Services. And General Protective Services looks at the overall living conditions of where the child are. And there's a multitude of factors, from the ability to receive food and nutrition to the ability to have a safe space to stay, from the ability to have the to get to school on time and regularly. And so they'll evaluate all of those conditions and create a report. Sometimes they find that a child needs certain things adjusted, and they'll give the parents a chance to adjust. If they don't think that there's any chance, or if there's the danger of an immediate harm to the child, they'll pull the child if necessary. But they do a very holistic review before they will pull the child from a place.
That's a last resort, then.
Correct, yeah. Unless there's a very specific allegation of abuse that is founded.
What about your second question, sir?
In other words, if you went in there and it was filthy and cockroaches all over the place, that husband or wife could still have those children in that house?
It's entirely possible. And Child Protective Services has their own guidelines on how they do that.
I was just, I'm kind of surprised to hear that. And also, my last question, I'll make it quick.
Sure.
When you, let's say somebody has a drug problem, which a lot of people do, and they give the children to the grandparents, and let's say the children have been abused from the original parents, they were abused under the drug situation, plus they might have abused them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you give them to the grandparents and the mother and dad get to go over there, if they're on drugs, what's going to prevent them from being more abused?
Well, if you believe that there's a suspected abuse of a child, the first thing that is always recommended is to report it to Childline. And if you Google Pennsylvania Childline, or it's Pennsylvania Keep Kids Safe is the website that they use for reports for abuse of children. Always make your report there. From there, Child Protective Services has a process that they go through, and they make an evaluation of whether or not those parents or whoever it may be should still have access to the child. But really, it falls down, it comes to the point of, did Child Protective Services make a recommendation one way or another? Now, if the grandparents or another party was standing who's acting in loco parentis as the guardians of the children, want to file for a PFA action, a protection from abuse action, they can do so, and that's the other way that they can go about in preventing folks from making contact with the children.
I hear you, but a lot of grandparents don't want to put a PFA against their own son or daughter, and they don't want to make them mad. I mean, they're kind of in a situation where they're, I imagine, hoping that the courts will come over there and check out the situation more than once in 6 months. And then you hear so many cases that the children and youth don't really do their job anymore.
Well, I can't speak to any kind of a comment on Children and Youth Services, but the system is in place where if a report is made, Children and Youth does have to make a review and investigation of any report that comes in. That's very clear under Pennsylvania law. And so that's always the first step that we recommend, is that if you believe that a child is being abused, make a report.
Hey, great.
Okay, thank you very much.
Great questions. Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
283-2525 is our number. If you have questions, 283-2525. Let's take a break. We'll be back to talk more with local attorney Sean Gallagher here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR for a Thursday. We'll be back after these words.
Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers congratulates orthopedic foot and ankle surgeon Dr. William Saar for being named a best doc by Pittsburgh Magazine for the third straight year.
I'm Dr. William Saar with Tri-Rivers. Whether you suffer a foot or ankle-related trauma, such as a fracture or dislocation, or require reconstructive foot and ankle surgery, I rely on my extensive experience and specialized training to get you back on your feet. For more information or to schedule an appointment, please visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day.
Our heart quickens, and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Are you 65 years of age? Did you know you are eligible to ride free transportation? That's right, free transportation. Sign up for your free transit pass at Butler Transit Authority's downtown bus terminal on West Newcastle Street. Ride the local Butler buses to shopping, destinations, medical appointments, and more. Feeling more adventurous? Take the bus to Pittsburgh. Shop, dine, and explore all that Pittsburgh has to offer. Visit our bus terminal or butlertransit.com for more information.
Welcome back, good friends, on a murky, I guess would be the perfect adjective to describe today. Soggy, patchy fog hanging on for a long time here this morning. And the possibility of some wet snow tonight and tomorrow. So I guess we're due for a little of that. Ask the Lawyer on today's program. And with us here in the studio is attorney Sean Gallagher from the local law firm of Murren Taylor and Gallagher on the Diamond in downtown Butler. Their offices are in the next tier bank building. You mentioned a website. We want to make sure that people have that, Sean, if they want to contact them. It's keepkidssafe.pa.gov.
Correct. If you believe that a child is being abused, there's a way to do an electronic report on there. You have the option of signing your name to it or doing it anonymously. They're open 24 hours a day, 366 days a year, being the leap year this year. but please make the report. There is nothing that the court system can do to get engaged unless a report is made.
You also mentioned in the last segment there someone with standing. We were talking about grandparents' law here in Pennsylvania, how grandparents under certain circumstances can get custody of kids. Is it just grandparents? What about, say, an aunt or an uncle? Do they ever have standing under Pennsylvania law if they wanted to take custody of kids that they thought, you know, were not being cared for by their biological parents?
Grandparents have the most out of anybody besides the parents. Aunts, uncles, or people who have had previous relationships with the children where they were acting as the quote-unquote parents of the children, where the child was living with them for a period of 6 months or more, those are the only situations where aunts and uncles and other persons of interest can really petition for standing in that case. But otherwise, no. The door is very limited to parents, minorly grandparents, and then very, 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 very rarely does anybody else outside of that have standing.
Mm-hmm. And if you weren't with us earlier, as Sean Gallagher mentioned, this is still relatively new law here in Pennsylvania. Obviously, this occurred generations ago, and there were various circumstances under which parents, biological parents, were either unable to or unwilling to take care of their kids, or perhaps maybe they were extremely ill or dead, and grandparents took over or other relatives took over, but it was kind of an informal arrangement from a legal standpoint.
Correct. And those informal arrangements can still happen today. It's just that in order to gain legal standing, to have the ability to go to the court system and say, the child should be with me right now or the child should be with so-and-so for now, you need to fit in within that very specified criteria. And we always recommend that you talk with an attorney before you go through that, just to know if you're going to even qualify to get through the door for standing.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of other, you know, legal ramifications, you know, should a child get vaccinated or not? You know, when do they go to the dentist? Or just a lot of things you've got to get wrapped up legally if you're going to go down that trail.
There is. I mean, when you're, depending on whether or not you're going for full custody or just visitation rights, so grandma and grandpa may want to just be able to see the children 2, 3, four times a week, a month, something along those lines, just to maintain a relationship with the child, then in that case, it's a little bit lesser of a standard. But if a grandparent is going for full custody of the child, then they need to be ready to step in to be the parent for the child.
Let's talk about that for a second. By the way, our phone number, folks, 283-2525. If you have questions or would like to join our conversation, 283-2525. I've talked with people, grandparents, who have been shut out from seeing their grandkids by, it's usually a daughter-in-law or a son-in-law, you know, through the marriage, who does not allow the grandparents to see the kids. So there is legal recourse for them under Pennsylvania law, too?
If the parents are separated. If the parents are not separated, then no, the grandparents don't have any ability to come in.
Well, that's tough.
It is.
That's tough for a lot of grandparents. And I'm not talking about grandparents who are being nebby or, you know, overstepping their bounds. They just want to see the grandkids once in a while.
That's correct. It's very hard, and it's very heartbreaking for me to have to tell a client that. But if the parents aren't separated, then there is no way through the court system for the grandparents to gain access.
Hmm. This is one of the areas of focus that your firm deals with in terms of family law. There are many other aspects of family law, of course.
That's correct. Our primary focus is on grandparent custody. We do limited amounts of other assorted, very minor divorce work, very limited custody work. But our primary focus in the family area is on grandparent custody.
Without getting specific, of course, because we speak in generalizations here, does this happen quite a bit in Butler County?
It's happening more, I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. My dad really started practicing in this area in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s. And whenever he started practicing, there were a couple of cases here and there that would work their way through. But as the law has changed, which opened the door a little bit more, but also as the demographic has changed, We 2 years ago, we saw the worst amount of opioid deaths here within Butler County.
Mm-hmm.
That is not limited just to here in Butler County. I've seen it in surrounding counties, Beaver, Lawrence, Venango, Clarion, you name it. It's happening more there. And it's happening as, without getting too metaphorical about it, it's happening as parents are becoming more and more interested in themselves and less interested in their children. They have unfortunate situations. We talked about opioids, other drug uses. We've talked about alcoholism. There's mental health issues that are not really dealt with often, and people need help. But unfortunately, the only way to get those people help is for them to recognize that they need help. I mean, I can sit here all day and opine about the ills of society and all that kind of thing, but really, it's just important to reach out to the person and say, I think you need some help.
283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Let's talk a little, shift gears, talk a little bit about real estate law.
Sure.
How and when do you need a lawyer when we're talking about real estate law?
The case where it comes up most often is your neighbor built a fence, you think the fence is on your property, and you and your neighbor get into a dispute about where the property line is. That's the case where most often it goes into litigation. But other times that you need a lawyer are in the case when you're closing on a house. Oftentimes, lawyers are the ones who do those closings. We do them here in our office. Other attorneys throughout the Butler area do that as well. And on the buyer's side, depending on whether or not you're doing it as a cash transaction or as a mortgage transaction, there's a lot of paperwork that can be involved. And having a lawyer there to go through all of it with you, make sure that you understand all of the paperwork. Because I can tell you right now, going through the process of building a house, and the stack of paperwork that I have received is thick. And I don't envy having to go through it, but that's my job. And that's why I'm hired to go through that paperwork to make sure that there's nothing terrible in there that is, or onerous towards the home buyer, and to make sure that I understand and you understand what is within that contract. One of the other things that often comes up, though, is in the cases of eminent domain. And this is something that we see in our firm both on the municipal side and on the case where we represent people who are having pieces of their property taken by eminent domain. And eminent domain is where the government takes a piece of your property for public use.
They want to widen a road, for example, and they need a little slice of the front, your front yard.
Widen a road, put in a sewer line, put in a water line. There are lots of situations where that can occur. And the government has to go through a process to do that. It's a process called it's an eminent domain action or a condemnation action where they have to file with the court and they have to give you a reasonable amount of time to contest it. And they also have to post fair market value for it. And you have the ability to contest whether or not their fair market value of the property is right or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the government side, it's our job to make sure that the government is doing it right. On the private side, it's our job to make sure that you are receiving the best representation and the best treatment that you can for that piece of property. There are some times when there are legitimate disputes between values of property. One appraiser can say one thing, another appraiser can say another thing. You either try and settle it or you'd go to court before a judge and let the judge settle it. So it's important that if your property is now I will caveat that and say in 8 times out of 10, a reasonable settlement is reached between the government and the person whose property is being condemned. And if it can be resolved like that, it can save money for all of the parties. But if it can't, then that's why the legal system is there.
This must take quite a bit of time. I mean, just think, folks, about Interstate 80, Interstate 79, all the land that had to be purchased from landowners, or even just the Route 422 bypass around Butler, which they've been in the process of rehabbing and resurfacing. They got a good chunk of it done last summer. They're going to do more of it this coming summer. I was looking, Sean, at some old aerial photographs of Butler County. These had to be some of the earliest aerial photographs that were ever taken. There were some from the late 30s and some from the 1940s. And that was one thing I was looking at. What did it look like just outside of Butler where the 422 bypass now is? Because Route 422 used to come right through the downtown, of course. And even that stretch of 4 miles or so had to be a lot of property that was purchased or I would suppose in some cases seized by people who said, I'm not selling. I'm not going to sell.
Correct. And it's actually very interesting. The history of eminent domain is one that's been widely researched and talked about. I'm going to shift into academic mode here for a little bit. If you look at how the railroads were built, they are some of the most interesting uses of the condemnation powers of the state. Within Pennsylvania itself, the railroads actually were delegated at one point the ability to condemn land. And so you see them coming through. So they were acting under the power of the state government. And as they came through, they'd say, we need this, 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 and this. And the state would say, okay. And so the railroads were really driving the government at that point because the state government saw that having a railroad was a public good. Now, 100 years later, we can debate the merits of that, but that's the reason why it was done in the first place. And then as you go west, you see not only the state governments getting involved in it, but the federal government. And the federal government was very willing to let the railroads essentially pick their territory as they went through because they saw the railroads as a public good. They were creating the highways to the west. And so they go through swaths of land that if you were trying to condemn today through the middle of national parks and that kind of thing, I don't think it would ever happen.
Yeah.
And so it was just a very different time whenever the railroads were coming through versus the big news right now is the Hyperloop. Elon Musk's proposed super high velocity speed tunnel between, depending on which flavor of the month it is, Pittsburgh and Chicago or Cleveland and Philadelphia or whatever it may be. And there's talk about the government, the state, local, federal governments getting involved in that. I mean, not only would the cost be astronomical, but just I don't know if there'd ever be a public demand that would exceed the public outcry over condemning wide swaths of land.
Yeah, I agree. And sometimes even very popular projects. I wasn't around then, but I know that they had to condemn a sizable number of properties to build Moraine State Park and to flood Lake Arthur because, in fact, there was a village, a hamlet that was completely submerged when they built Lake Arthur, the hamlet of Isle.
Now, I will say that not all condemnations are done with hostility between the parties. Take, for example, Adams Township. Adams Township has had a longstanding policy and ordinance in place that as 228 was being developed, if you had a property that was abutting Route 228, you were required to dedicate 40 feet of right-of-way to the township.
Uh-huh.
And what that meant and what that means now is that as PennDOT is going through the Route 228 project, because of the amount of land that is available for public use because of the foresight of Adams Township supervisors in those times, the costs go way down. And suddenly a viability of a project like 228, expanding it to four ways, four lanes, the whole way between Cranberry and Route 19 and Route 8, is suddenly a whole lot more viable because there was some forward-thinking planning. And it didn't cost a whole lot to the people developing Route 228. There's still plenty of land. There's still plenty of places, and plenty of businesses are still going in. It's just that because of a little bit of forward thinking, projects like that can happen.
So you are sometimes called upon to represent property owners who aren't satisfied with, say, the offer that's being made to purchase their house or their property?
That's correct. As a part of any condemnation action, the local government is required to get an appraisal for the property, and they have to make an offer of fair market value on that property. Now, as the landowner, you have the ability to accept that or to decline the proposal. Well, first of all, before you even get to talking about the money, is if you disagree that the use is for a public use, you have the ability to challenge the initial taking of the property. If you understand and you agree that it's for a public use and you're looking to just deal with the numbers portion of it, then you have the ability to challenge the numbers portion of it, hire your own appraiser, get your own set of numbers, and come to a conclusion of this is fair market value, this is not fair market value. The answer may be somewhere in between, and then it's a matter of negotiating a settlement or finding, taking it to a judge and letting a judge decide.
What about easements? And that might be, because I'm not trained in this area, that might not be the proper terminology, but there have been, especially over the past 2 or 3 years, an awful lot of pipelines built across Butler County, mainly for the transfer of gas from fracking wells. And it was a monster one that went right past the edge of Butler, down in the Bonnybrook Road area, and then on out to Evan City Road area. Monstrous thing. Does the same thing happen there in terms of a company that's building a pipeline getting an easement?
So they are a private entity. The companies that are building those pipelines were various companies, EM Energy, Edgemark, Rex, but Rex wasn't really building pipelines. But all of those lines were privately obtained easements where the landowners were provided compensation by the companies. The local governments, at least the ones that I represent, had nothing to do with those.
Okay, so the private landowners gave the okay for a fee, of course, I'm sure.
Correct.
To let the pipeline go through their area.
That's correct.
What about when it had to go under a highway, like Route 68, for example, or Bonnybrook Road or something like that? Wouldn't the municipality have to be involved there, or PennDOT or somebody?
Yeah, so if it's a state road, the state has restrictions on when and how you can bore under roads. Typically, they don't like you cutting the roads because that leaves their nice paving all mucked up, and they don't like to have to go back and resurface it or make somebody else come back and resurface it. So they'll require them to bore. To go through a municipal road, a township road, whatever it may be, they'll need the permission of the municipality to make the cut into the road. But in a lot of those circumstances, they'll bore if they're deep enough, which doesn't require them to make a cut. Now, they'll still need the permission of the municipality to block the traffic. Mm-hmm. They'll need to notify the local police departments. They should notify the local police departments. It doesn't always happen, but they should. And then once they're done with whatever they need to do, they need to set the road back to the way it was before.
I'm running out of time, and I got more questions here. Hang on. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk more with Attorney Sean Gallagher. It's great to have him with us here in the studio today on It's Your Turn. Back right after these words.
Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. I'd like to talk to you for just a moment here about the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here at Butler. What a great job they do to help those who are less fortunate in many ways. They operate the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank, of course. They have their St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart and their Client Aid Program. And the Client Aid Program helps needy families or individuals, maybe with help on a heating bill or a rent payment at the end of the month, Client Aid. And that's funded through the operation of the thrift store. So you can help by donating items that you no longer need or want to the thrift store. It's very easy to do. Drop-off bins are right inside the door. You can use the container outside. They're located in the Greater Butler Mart. So think about it. Next time you're cleaning the closet or the upstairs, instead of throwing that stuff away, why not donate it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler? We stand tallest when we stoop to help others.
Heading out of town for that special Valentine's Day getaway? Be sure to stop by Tobacco for Less for all your smoking and vaping needs. They're Western PA's largest glass emporium, complete with hundreds of glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a 19-foot vape juice bar. Even their health and wellness department stays fully stocked with a great selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less, with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Well, despite the old groundhog's prediction, we still may see some winter. The folks at West End Tire and Service are ready to go. They've got over 400 snow tires in stock for your car, light-duty truck. In fact, they've got tires for just about anything. You know where they are down there on West Cunningham Street. Used to be Siemens Tire Service. Well, they still have the same great people and the same great service that they always had. They can do brakes, shocks, struts, oil changes. They'll align your front end, rotate your tires, and fix your tires. And their talented technicians are there all the time to check your air pressure and do evaluations for free anytime you stop in. It's West End Tire and Service, West Cunningham Street, right next to Battery Warehouse Plus.
Talking on the It's Your Turn program today with local attorney Sean Gallagher. I wanted to go back to one of the things you mentioned in dealing with real estate law. A classic example of a property owner builds a fence, and the neighbor says, that fence is on my property, and the property owner says, no, it's on my property. And so you have what eventually leads to a legal battle. How the heck do you solve that? How do attorneys solve that?
Well, the first answer to that is we always try and settle it. You know, we try and find a piece of, no pun intended, common ground between the parties.
Very good.
To see if there's a way to negotiate it. But if there isn't, then we go back and we look at history. We look at old surveys. We look at old deed descriptions. We look at maps, if they're available.
And they're a matter of public record at the courthouse?
That's correct. They're all available down at, well, most of them are available down at the Recorder of Deeds office. The surveys, not necessarily, but the old deeds and the plans, if they're all available in public record down there. And it's... the best way that I always describe real estate, and I'm going to borrow this from my dad, is it's like a puzzle. You're looking at different pieces of it as it's gone through time, and you're trying to figure out, where does this piece fit in? Because oftentimes, if you go back to 1821, when you're looking at a sheriff's deed, that piece of property gets subdivided multiple times over the course of history, but then suddenly it gets recombined in 1960, but the deed descriptions aren't the same. So what should have been the same property that you saw in 1821 suddenly looks different because the surveyor has changed. A lot of old surveys used landmarks. We always say that Pittsburgh is famous for giving its direction in landmarks. You know where the old Shop and Save is? That's exactly where a lot of old deeds use that. You'll see the old elk tree on the Porter property, or the center line of the carriage route that no longer exists. And you have to, number one, understand what the heck that was, and then number two, see how that was translated into modern terms. Because as the survey profession evolved and technology improved over time, we went from systems which used landmarks and lengths to a system that used coordinates in degrees. And so that system, it's always interesting seeing how it transitioned to that and then trying to come up with, well, this is what it looked like in 1821. This is what that 1821 deed would look like by modern standards. So, Your Honor, this is the way that it should be. And the judge will either tell me, yes, you're right, or no, you're not.
See if somebody else has comments in this area. 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. You're on the air with Attorney Sean Gallagher.
Dave, I asked another question or two. Do you mind if I ask a couple more?
Well, you have to make it quick because we're running out of time
here. All I want to know is if you have a right-of-way, a lot of places in the past had alleys going past their houses into another driveway, come up around, come down. Mm-hmm. If you have a person that builds a building on their garage and nobody's used that alley for 20 years, can you make that man take down that garage? And also, if somebody builds onto your property and you know it's your property, but you don't complain or bitch about it, and you wait 20 years, don't they have right to keep that garage there?
Interesting.
That's all I had. Thank you.
Let's see what Attorney Sean Gallagher has about that. Is there common law, for lack of another phrase, that after so many years, ownership is gone?
Well, I'm going to start with the first part of his question, actually, and that's the idea of paper streets. Whenever plans are in subdivisions work their way through the municipalities and eventually get recorded at the Recorder of Deeds, a lot of the ones from the early 1900s, the late 1800s, show alleyways between buildings, especially in the boroughs, Marsborough, Evans City Borough. They were accesses that were there at one point in time, and then as things have changed, they have disappeared or not been used for prolonged periods of time. But the interesting thing that often occurs with those paper streets is they show up on the maps, people have built over them, but the municipality has never abandoned them. And so there's always a question of whether or not the municipality still has the right to maintain that right-of-way. And the answer in most cases is yes. Hmm. Unless the municipality has specifically abandoned that right-of-way, they have the ability to go in and reopen that right-of-way and then demand whoever has put stuff in the right-of-way to take it down.
All depends on what's on the deed that goes. And we have them that go all the way back to the 1800s and early 1800s here in Butler County?
Yeah, the earliest deeds are from the 1820s, 1810s, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
But the other, so in regards to that, the municipality always has the right to come back and reopen the street. The second question that he had is a question of what is adverse possession. And adverse possession is a term of law that says that you have essentially assumed control of your neighbor's property. And in order to obtain adverse possession, you have to meet certain requirements. It has to be open, notorious, hostile, and for a duration. So open means that you're doing it in plain sight. Notorious means that you have to be doing it against the wishes of your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Hostile means that they can't have said okay. And duration means that they have to have it for a duration of, in the state of Pennsylvania, it's 21 years. And so, yes, there are some times when a person can claim a piece of land by adverse possession by building a garage. He tell the neighbor doesn't say anything about it, and then 21 years later, it could be his. However, doesn't mean it is necessarily. There is very adverse possession is always very fact-specific, and it's not just as simple as mowing your neighbor's lawn. If it was, then you'd see property shifting all the time.
I need to take a final break here. We'll be back to wrap up in just a moment. Be right back.
February at Oesterling's Lawn and Garden is filled with amazing gifts for your pets. If you didn't know, this month is Pet Dental Month. So grab some Frontline Oral Defense Chews, Petnology Oral Care Toothpaste, Primal Instinct Dental Bones, or even Sports Mix Grain-Free Dog Biscuits. Oesterling's also has plenty of horse treats and snowman bird feeders. And remember, with spring just around the corner, vegetable seeds will be arriving very soon. They'll have everything you'll need at Oesterling's Lawn and Garden.
Central Electric Cooperative is excited to announce its annual Good Neighbor Scholarship Program, which will award scholarships worth $2,000 each to 10 individuals. Scholarships are available to all members, whether you're an adult returning to the classroom, a college or trade school student, or a high school senior. The funds used for these scholarships come from unclaimed capital credits and do not impact member rates. Applications are scored based on voluntary, non-paid service to community, school, and church. To be eligible, you must be a Central Electric member, be enrolled in a post-secondary educational institution, complete the Good Neighbor Scholarship application available on our website, and compose a one-page essay on your volunteer community involvement. Submissions are due March 15th, with scholarships being awarded in May. Visit Central Electric Cooperative's website for more information. This is Emily Shoemaker for Central Electric Cooperative. This institution is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
Wrap up our conversation with Attorney Sean Gallagher. Sean, I know you've been involved with the Butler County Bar Association Foundation. Can you give us an update on what's happening with the foundation?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do so, Dave. Last year in 2019, the foundation was able to award out 6 grants to local community agencies here within the county. We're very happy to announce that we're doing that again this year. Our grant application process is open now to local community agencies. We invite them to take a look at the Butler County Bar Association website. Our grant application is available there, and they are due at the end of the month, the last Friday of the month. So we're always very excited to be able to give back to the community. Without this community, our profession would not exist. And so in the simplest way, we can give back with the funds that have been donated through the generosity of the members of the foundation. It's really the pleasure of myself personally, but also the pleasure of the foundation board and the general membership of the Bar Association to be able to give back to the community.
So you can get all the details on that from the Butler County Bar Association website?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Well, that's good stuff. I know that's been up and operational now for a few years, and you've...
Yeah, it's been in various incarnations since the 1980s, but we have been really going strong since 2015.